Hi, and thanks for tuning in. I'm Dr. Sharif Moore of the Drug Free America Foundation, and this is the Pathways to Prevention podcast, where we discuss some of the most innovative and inspiring work being done around the world in substance use prevention, treatment, and recovery. Joining us today is Dave Clausen, the co-director of the Mid-America Prevention Technology Transfer Center. Dave, thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, it is an absolute honor to be here. Thank you for having me.
So to start us off, I always ask all of my guests about their personal journey and how they came to work in the prevention field. So I'd be delighted if you'd like to share your story with us.
Ooh, absolutely. And how much time you got? Because I love telling stories. but really, my clear-cut journey to prevention actually started when I returned from Iraq. See, I was deployed to Iraq as a junior in college, and I was there for just a couple days shy of a year. And when I got back from my deployment, I jumped right back into college to finish up my bachelor's degree. And, well, quite frankly, I struggled with PTSD. And I had suffered a traumatic brain injury from being blown up with an improvised explosive device or roadside bomb. And I wasn't quite sure what I was really struggling with. I just knew I was struggling and I wanted to fit in. And that just really, between dealing with those and the college environment, that just led me down a path of heavy, heavy drinking. And I actually became known as Party Dave. Not really proud of that nickname, but that became my identity. And as I struggled and really just was not happy, didn't like who I was, the kind of person I was being, I finally had enough. I was sick and tired of being hungover and being Party Dave. And the more I leaned into my personal development, the more I saw the importance of prevention and that it really can make a difference in changing somebody's life. And I didn't realize it at the time, but that's where my path to prevention started, was from my own struggles. And fast forward a few years, I was working on my master's degree and also working as a university police officer. And that's where I really dipped my toes in the water when it comes to evidence-based prevention and prevention science. But most folks wouldn't necessarily say, wait, a university police officer doing prevention? Like, they didn't teach me that stuff at the police academy. It was through building friendships and partnerships with other departments across campus and having conversations about what life was like as a police officer. I saw the impact alcohol and drugs had, not only from my lens as a student, but now from a police officer, the impact it has on the entire campus community, the student body, student success, the community, and also how I would do my job as a police officer. And actually, I remember one of my friends, Eric Davidson, he's the director of the Illinois Higher Education Center. And he said, well, hey, we've got prevention science for that. Told me about the upstream analogy. And I said, all right, count me in. I want to do more of that whole upstream prevention. And that's how I got into prevention. Kind of multiple different lenses, different paradigms, but really just the world working and leading me to where I'm supposed to be.
So can you give some examples of how you were able to put prevention into practice as a campus police officer?
Yes, indeed. Oh, back to more stories. And actually, if you got on YouTube, you might even be able to find some old videos of me as a police officer doing some prevention work. But if you've listened to my podcast, you've heard me say prevention is better together, and together we are stronger. I do believe that at my core. And as a police officer, I was doing just that. I was building relationships and partnerships with other departments across campus and in our community. So we had the Health Education Resource Center, the Counseling Center, the Student Affairs, Housing, the Athletic Department. We all came together around prevention messaging and prevention efforts to the point where whenever I was invited to go give a presentation to a class or student group, I would bring one of my prevention team members with me as well. And so it really made for some great informative prevention messaging, prevention programs. And we also had a lot of fun because we did the EIU Mayhem Prevention Team. We all came together, we pulled our resources, and we wanted to put together a prevention campaign, YouTube videos, poster series, all as a parody of the Mayhem commercials. And yours truly got to be the star actor playing Mayhem, which involved me wearing a three-piece suit, a blue wig, and rappelling off of one of our campus buildings. But it was a great partnership, great collaboration, and it was also a lot of fun at the same time. Those are some fun ones there. Some fun ones, definitely.
So it sounds like your Army training came in handy.
Yes.
Rattling down the building.
Ooh, and actually another way it came in handy too. When we were in Iraq, we were infantry and I was on a recon sniper team, and we were out walking patrols through the cities. And what we found is the more we built relationships with the local Iraqi civilians, we started to build trust with them. And they understood that, hey, they're here to help us. The more that the civilians understood that, the more they felt comfortable talking to us and helping us help them. And that's all because we got out of our trucks and went and talked with them. And so I actually applied that same approach as a university police officer. I got out of my squad car and I went and I talked to folks, talked to students, just proactive, positive conversations and engagements. And that same method, that the GOT method, get out of the truck method, is a great way. You know, get out of your office, go build relationships.
It sounds like it was also an integral part of your healing process.
Yes, the more I saw my power to affect positive change, the more perspective I got, and the more I was able to relate what I was doing to my personal story, my personal struggles and challenges, the more I found my passion, my fire, my drive growing and just keeping me moving forward.
It seems to me that when it comes to substance use prevention, alcohol misuse prevention, college students would probably be a pretty tough grade. It would probably be a pretty tough sell. What were some of the techniques you were able to use to connect with individual students to help, you know, motivate those behavior changes?
Ooh, this is a fun one. All right. So my reputation as a police officer was known as Officer Nice because I was so friendly and I would take time to talk to the students. It'd take an extra 10, 15, 20 minutes just to talk to the students, to the point where if I gave a student conduct code citation and they had to go to the student conduct office, the office would ask, hey, do you remember which officer it was? They said, no, but he was really nice. They knew that meant me. And through that reputation, the director of student conduct was like, hey, Dave, you should come teach some of the alcohol sanction classes with us. So we can do that together rather than just our student conduct officers doing it. Okay. I'll do it. Didn't really know what I was getting into, but in order for me to do that, they sent me to a basics training, so brief alcohol screening intervention for college students, and also motivational interviewing training. I picked them up pretty well. They seemed like a natural fit. And when I was co-teaching those alcohol sanction classes, the students liked having those kind of conversations with me, a motivational interviewing style conversation, even as a cop. And college students, generally, they didn't like talking to me as a police officer right out of the gate. So I took that out with me on patrol, and I started using motivational interviewing on patrol. And there's really four main sort of points that I like to bring up when I talk about using motivational interviewing on patrol. And hey, do you mind if I run through them real quick?
Oh, please, by all means.
All right. Awesome. So I like to use the analogy of picture yourself driving down the road and you look up and you notice there's a squad car up ahead. What do most people do?
Turn around and go the other direction.
They turn around or they'll slow down and they'll check the brakes. They'll look down and check their speed. So what better time to talk to somebody when their motivation is already elevated? Because they're thinking about their behavior by the mere presence of a police officer. And so perfect time to have that conversation is when their motivation to change, the motivation is already elevated. And we've got what I like to call closing the life goes on time gap. See, when you're interacting with a college student out on patrol, they're thinking about their behavior. Their motivation's elevated, but then the next day goes on and the next day goes on and they haven't gone and had to talk to anybody about that underage drinking citation they received. At that night, they thought maybe, oh gosh, it's the end of the world. My parents are going to be pissed. This is not good, but life went on. A week goes by. Then they get into that student conduct office and start that conversation about their behavior, about change, but their motivation's lowered a little bit because time has gone on. So if we can close that time gap and create that jumpstart to change when their motivation is already elevated, they're already thinking about their behavior change, it'll help them move through the stages of change just that much faster. And then if you look at a lot of the screening and brief interventions, it's all built around motivational interviewing. A lot of the alcohol sanctions, the student conduct code sanctions, are built and embrace motivational interviewing. So think about consistent support. The student receives a little jump start, little MI out on patrol. And then when they enter that student conduct process, they're greeted with motivational interviewing. And when they go through that sanction and that course, they're more motivational interviewing just to help support them through those stages of change with that consistent support rather than something, one thing here, a completely different approach here. That consistency that is going to help students move through the stages of change and change their behavior as well. And then also, I got to tell you, if you think about most people and you break it down by generations, most people, when I was talking to students, they didn't care who I was, what I did, or any of my training or background. They wanted to talk about themselves. And as a police officer, it worked out great. They were doing the talking. It was about them because it wasn't about me. It was about the students. And through those conversations, I got to know students and build relationships and learn about their backgrounds, where they're coming from and who they are as an individual. And it was a great way to really just get to know the students and build those good relationships just by embracing the MI spirit, MI style.
Did you notice any kind of common threads running through the students that you interacted with in terms of, you know, background, maybe mental health problems that would be the result of them, you know, drinking or using?
A lot of what I saw was more attributed to misperceived norms, that college experience, what everybody's doing, what I'm supposed to be doing, which quite frankly, that got me. That was one of the things that led me to drinking, was feeling like I needed to fit in. And that's the norm. It was those misperceptions of norms.
And so one of the, I have a limited understanding of motivational interviewing, but from what I know, one of the hallmarks is that it's more about listening to the person and like a reflective listening where you're very attentive and you're kind of repeating back to them some of the things they're telling you to just sort of validate what they're saying. Is that accurate?
Yes. Yeah. So it is a non-confrontational style. It's built on partnership, acceptance, compassion, and empathy. And it's meant to help the individual resolve ambivalence about a behavior, a behavior change that they might be exploring. So they might be contemplating making a change, or they might be in pre-contemplation. They're not sure if they want to make a change. They're in those early stages. Should I do this? Should I not do that? And through using the ORs, so open-ended questions, affirmations, reflections, and summaries, you can help elicit and strengthen their motivation for making that change. So the motivation, the reasons for making that change, the why to make that change is coming from that individual, because it's aligned with what's important to them. Because it doesn't matter if I tell them why they need to change if that reason is not important to them. So they voice their own reasons for wanting to make a change. And then they voice their plan, their next steps for making that change, because it's coming from them. It's their ideas, their choice. We're just asking questions to help them guide and clarify and elicit and strengthen their motivation for change.
Now, what were some of the major reasons that they would give you for wanting to change?
Some of it was related to academics. Some was related to their own individual health. I can clearly remember one student was talking about the financial costs. Once he realized how much he had been spending on his drinking habits, his eyes opened real wide and he kind of had this heavy, oh my gosh, why am I doing that? And the very first time I used motivational interviewing on patrol, I can still see it clear as day in that residence hall room talking with that student. And he had had run-ins with university police the past 3 weekends. Different officers responded before him, but I was the one there that night. And his reason for wanting to really make a change was that he wanted to make his grandmother proud. She was the one that had raised him, and he was the first one to go to college, and her health wasn't doing very well, and that was stressing him out. So that was one of the leading factors why he was using. But then he kind of realized, wait, if I get jammed up by the police every weekend and I end up getting kicked out of school, that's not going to do any good for grandma. That she's, oh no, I can't do that to her. So that was one of his big motivators to make a change.
Now, you've actually written a book on motivational interviewing that's geared towards police officers, correct?
Yes, yes. I had several folks on campus that took time to say, Dave, we've never seen a cop care like that. We've never seen a cop talk to students like that. There needs to be more of that. And I did some research and really couldn't find anything around law enforcement using motivational interviewing back when I wrote the book in 2015. So it's been out there for a while now. But yes, just it's just a foundational book to help officers see the importance and see how motivational interviewing fits into what they do as police officers. And it's been kind of cool as I've been doing training across the country and folks have been reading the book, hearing how they have embraced motivational interviewing and are plugging it into the work that they do. Everywhere from a gang unit where that officer is working with the youth that want to leave the gang, but they're a little ambivalent about it, to crisis intervention training, where when they're responding to calls, they can use a little motivational interviewing to help that individual increase their motivation to want to go seek help. and get the treatment that they need. So it's been great to see how folks are just picking it up and running with it to really create that positive change in their communities.
So that's fantastic. So it's use, the techniques are not limited to the campus, but in a wide range of situations that law enforcement dealing with youth might find themselves in.
Yes, and not just with youth, with adults as well. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And so you can find your book on Amazon.com, I presume?
That is correct. Motivational Interviewing for Campus Police.
So I you also have an interest in veterans health and veterans issues. Now, when you returned from the Middle East, did you find that there were many resources available to you to help you with, you know, just some of the issues you were experiencing as a result of your time over there?
So when I returned, it was May of 2006. Post-traumatic stress, traumatic brain injuries, they weren't really talked about. I want to say, and my memory is not that good, whether that's from the TBI or just getting older. I think we did a quick little PTSD screening when we returned, but it wasn't much. I didn't even know what PTSD was or why they were asking questions. All I knew was I wanted to get home. So I'm going to say what I think they want to hear so I can get home. So I didn't really have any awareness or idea of my situation or common situations that veterans might be dealing with. So I wasn't looking to see what kind of help was even out there, because I didn't know. That was when I returned, and hey, it has changed a lot. There are a lot of great resources out there for veterans.
Are you currently involved in any projects that work with veterans or deal with veterans issues?
Yes. So on the individual level, I actually coach a couple of veterans using just kind of building on my motivational interviewing skill set, but really just coaching them to help them lean into their natural strengths, that discipline, that structure that the military brought them to help them first create a vision, create a path, and stay that course as well, just building on their natural strengths. Another thing that I kind of put together as well was the Student Veteran Daily Planner. When I looked back at my story and what really helped me get to be who I am today, it came from structure. It came from routines. It came from discipline and habits and being intentional. And so I wanted a daily planner that aligned with the military lingo, the military background, something that spoke a common language to me. There's a lot of daily planners out there, but I hope I don't offend anybody, but they were kind of flu fluffy, had flowers and glitter and army infantry. I didn't want to use one of those. I wanted something to plan my day intentionally, plan and track my fitness, both mental and physical fitness, and also have a designated spot to remind me to do some buddy checks, to reach out to some buddies and see how they're doing as well. So I put that together, and that actually kind of complements the coaching as well, because it's about building those habits with intentionality and discipline.
Well, that's phenomenal. So you're able to take your military training and apply that in your coaching business and help other people, you know, have built that structure in their lives, which is so important and is so lacking in a lot of people's lives, especially, you know, young men. Mm-hmm. So it's very important. Now, is your work as a coach, is it principally with veterans?
It is actually with all demographics. I was actually on a coaching call last week with somebody that worked in the healthcare field, just doing some good, solid, just coaching, helping to uncover their own natural strengths and then explore how they can really leverage those, lean into those in their workplace.
Fantastic. Well, you know, one of the things that I'm very impressed by, just, you know, in the time that I've known you, is just how invested you are in other people's success and how much you want to see. And it's very, very sincere. And that is a rare quality.
That's what brings me joy, brings me energy, is lifting others up and helping others succeed and win and really just lean into who they are and live authentic and be who they want to be.
Why don't you tell me a little bit about the work that you do with the PTTC?
Ooh, all right. Yeah. So if y'all thought I was fired up now, you just wait. So I'm going to guess some of the listeners might not be familiar with the Mid-America Prevention Technology Transfer Center. So we're funded by SAMHSA to provide substance misuse prevention training and technical assistance. Now, my region is the Mid-America region, so Missouri, Iowa, Nebraska, and Kansas. Our goal is to provide training and TA to the prevention workforce within those four states. That's what we do, but where I get really fired up is why we do it. And if there's any Simon Sinek fans out there, we're starting with our why. And that's to create a culture of community so that we can all come together and support each other in creating safe, healthy, and drug-free communities. So why we do what we do is because we do believe prevention is better together and that together we are stronger. So we become the hub that brings people together to foster partnership, to foster peer sharing, peer learning, and spark those new partnerships and relationships to help create that culture of community where we can support each other. I get really fired up because it has been beautiful to see it come to life. And we're just now finishing up our third year of funding. And a couple stories real quick to share or examples. The pandemic hit and we went in the lockdown, but the need for prevention work was there. It didn't go away. And our folks were a little challenged and unsure, how do we move forward? And so we pivoted. We had already built great relationships. So we brought in our partners at Hue Life to deliver some virtual facilitation labs to help our folks learn how to quickly adapt and facilitate meetings effectively, efficiently, and to increase buy-in. And what we saw from that, the folks in our region loved them, embraced them, and put them to work. So much that one of our states got out and were kind of the informal leaders when it came to delivering the substance abuse prevention skills training in a virtual setting. It was designed for in-person. They leaned into the virtual facilitation skills that we brought them, and they put together sort of one of the first virtual offering how-tos, to the point where one of our other states said, hey, how'd you guys do that? Because we had created that culture of community and togetherness, they like, oh, hey, we'll give you all of our stuff. Here you go. This is how we did it. That cross-state sharing. And it's a full circle story because one of the trainers for that state was also somebody that delivered the virtual facilitation labs in the beginning, was one of our trainers for that. So it went full circle. She got to see what she trained and how one of our states used it, incorporated it, built on it. And then that came back to her to deliver what they had then created as well. So I just love that full circle stuff. And it's that coming together to support each other.
Are you a fan of the A-Team, the old A-Team with George Peppard, Hannibal?
Yes.
I love it when a plan comes together.
Right. It's been pretty cool. We've even had states planning cross-state virtual training together. And like, I kind of feel like that's probably something that didn't used to happen very often, is states planning prevention training together. Like, it's some cool stuff going on, and it's that culture of community. It's how open and willing to share the folks in our region are. They're always willing to help each other out.
Yeah, that's pretty remarkable because within organizations, different groups can be very competitive, territorial, different organizations within a state, let alone, across state lines. So that's quite a remarkable achievement, I would say.
Yeah, all I did was create the space for folks to come together, and they came together, and they're leaning into it and helping each other out.
Build it and they will come.
Yes.
So what are you guys currently working on?
Well, this being our third year, we really stepped up the game when it comes to community building. And we've had a series of communities of practice. We've had several different series for just different audiences. So we have a community of practice that's geared towards community coalition members and leaders. We have one geared towards prevention training and technical assistance providers. We have one for our prevention leadership in our region. And then we have one that centers around drug endangered children. And then the last one we have, it's open to the entire behavioral health workforce, really meant to break down those silos and bring folks together. So like I said, all in on community building, all in on creating that culture of community. When I stepped into this role as co-director, I said, I'm going to approach building the PETTC with the goal of working myself out of a job. I want the region to be, their capacity to be so high, they're coming together and supporting each other so well that they don't need me. They don't need the PETTC anymore because they've got it. That's what I hope I see in the future. Is working myself out of a job.
Well, Dave, it has been such a pleasure to talk with you. Thank you so much for coming on, and I really look forward to working with you in the future, and thank you again for all the great work you are doing to further the cause of prevention.
It's been an honor. Looking forward to it. I always find myself leaving our conversations happy and ignited and motivated. So thank you for that. And thank you for the work you're doing and leading the way with this podcast. See you soon.
The feeling is mutual, my friend. Thanks again. Take care. And for all of our listeners, be sure to check out Dave's book, Motivational Interviewing for Campus Police. It's available on Amazon in paperback or Kindle.